face. Well, I, you know, I peaked in the 80s.
Did you?
I did. Oh. Yeah. I looked pretty good.
How
in the
old
80s.
Were you in the 80s?
I was in my late 20s, early 30s.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't peak in high school.
No, I didn't either.
No, thank God. That's bad. I think it's sad when people peak in high school.
It's sad. You have so much life left.
Yeah, I know. And then it's all downhill.
I don't think you're done peaking though. Like you're just kind of, you've like peaked and then you stayed there. Like
me?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh God. Well, thanks.
Yeah. And I hope to do the same. Okay. So I'm Natalia.
Okay. I'm Candace. And this is Not a Single Fork, just another podcast about food and cooking, but we're keeping it real.
Real, real.
And we're going to take a step back in time to when I first started.
When
cooking,
she peaked.
Cooking. When I consider myself peaking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was peeking.
Hello.
Peaking. So I started cooking seriously, not professionally, but I really started cooking when I was in graduate school.
When you say that, you mean like having dinner parties?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And experimenting
mm-hmm.
with different cuisines and
different
cultures
recipes and stuff you haven't done before.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't really have a foundation for how all this would happen in life, you know, and by that I mean, and the reason why I'm saying that is because my older daughter said to me one day, and it's kind of sparked interest in other pursuits that I'm doing, but she's like, you know, I can read a recipe and I can make a recipe. She says, but I don't understand why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of people feel that way.
And I think when you don't understand why you're doing what you're doing, it's harder to cook.
Yeah. Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Even though you can follow a recipe. I mean, anyone.
Sure, but if you know how to read.
Anyone can
Jesus,
follow a recipe.
You can just
really.
Be like, one cup of this, one. Da, da, da.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of, you know, I'm taking that. I'm working on that. Let's just say that. How about that?
Okay.
Working on that. So the
1980s.
When I first started to kind of put things together.
Do you remember your first dinner party? Like your first, like, stressful, stress-inducing, you did absolutely fucking everything. You were trying to impress friends or whatever, dinner party.
Yes, but that's not my first recollection of doing some cooking outside the box.
What was your first one?
My first one was we, as graduate students, there were some of us who would get together and it was sort of like a dinner club
mm-hmm.
and we would all make different things or whatever.
It was like a group of friends that just got together every week for dinner or something.
And I made risotto for the first time.
Okay.
Yes.
And how was that?
I remember it being good.
Okay.
Because I had read a lot about it and I knew how it was supposed to look and I knew that you had to stir it and, you know, all that jazz. So that's really my first memory of doing something that was unusual,
different, new.
Yeah. So that was my, and I still love to make risotto.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of that, but yeah, I had a lot of stressful dinner parties where I did everything. Yeah.
And everything had to be perfect.
Yes. Martha Stewart
style.
That's
how I started too.
Yeah. And it's terrible.
That's how we're taught. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how we were taught. I don't know if everybody was taught that way, but like, my family had always had big get-togethers and we had slava every year. And so everything had to be perfect.
Explain what slava is.
Slava is our saint's day. And so basically you have like a, this is going to sound insane. You have a saint that's like dedicated to your family's name. And then every year on a certain date, that saint's day, you have a slava, which is a big dinner party. And you invite, we lived in a very Yugoslavian neighborhood. Like that's all we hung out with was all those people that escaped from the war together. That was like our family. Those were the people that you called auntie, you know, uncle, that kind of shit. You made specific things. You made specific entrees, specific desserts, and like five desserts. And you had to, and you'd go to someone's house and be like, well, they didn't have, did you see that at so-and-so's house, they didn't make the blah, 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 you know? Or I'd be like, why didn't they make that or whatever? And these desserts, I remember we would start cooking because we would have to, the women,
more specifically.
And children would have to do everything. And so I remember my mom and my grandmother would start cooking, like, oh, you'd start cooking a week ahead of time because there's no way. Because you basically, you have all these people that come over, but it's an open house. So everybody knows, oh, it's their Slava. Like, if you're free that night, like, you go out of a show of respect. And of course, if you have like English friends and shit, you invite them too, because why not? You got all this food, but usually not, because then the Serbian people wouldn't talk to them. But anyway,
or they would speak Serbian in front of them and no one would know what they were saying.
So usually there were no English people there, and you'd get dressed, you know, you had to get dressed to the nines, and you come in and you'd eat the, what was it called? It was my favorite thing. It's this, goddamn, we're going a different path. It's this, I will think of the name of it. And the thing is you come in, you take a spoonful of this, you cross yourself, you say hello to the...
Who was your saint? Your family. Remember. You don't remember your family saint?
No, because it was my grandfather's and my uncle's. It's not...
Oh, it wasn't your family. It was your family.
No, like my grandfather had the saint and then it transfers to my uncle. I think it was St. Nicola. I think it was St. Nicola because we had a huge picture of him in like the big room. And it only transfers to the men, you know, it's very, anyway, yeah. So you'd come in. So my favorite thing was, and I don't know why I'm going on this tangent, but you'd come in and it was just like this wheat. It was like bulgur wheat, like dessert dome. And on the top was this marzipan rose that my mom, a week ahead of time, there would be desserts everywhere. These desserts were like what you would get at like a 5-star restaurant, like perfectly diamond shaped and like with a chocolate, like specific, they had to have a specific design. And it was just like, why are we talking about this?
Because I asked you what a slava was.
Oh, so anyway, so you'd come in and you take a bite of this. And I'll think of the word. I'll text my mom in a second while we're talking. And I don't know, you know, as a kid, I liked weird shit, right? Like Brussels sprouts and spinach and whatever. And this was like my favorite thing. And you're supposed to come in and take a spoonful, put your spoon down, cross yourself, say hello to the host, and then go to the party, which was like in this room. And as a kid, I remember like, because you have to run around and do stuff and make sure everything perfect, you know. And I would like run by and like take a bite. And like... and then I'd be like, whoop, I'm coming by it again. I better have another bite. And like, and I remember like, I can't get caught. Like, I'm only allowed to have one bite. Anyway, so because everything had to be perfect for a dinner party. So anyway, we did that every year. And everything had to, I mean, linens. I mean, because it was one of those two where you got judged by everybody, right?
Yeah.
If it wasn't perfect. Oh, look, that broke. Oh, look at the design on the cake. You know, blah, 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 blah.
Well, my mom would have holiday open houses where there would be hundreds of people come through our house.
That you didn't know?
Well, I didn't know them, but they were like business friends and my dad and all that kind of stuff. And hundreds of people throughout the day, like starting early evening through the wee hours of the night. And my mom made the food for everything. She didn't want anyone to touch the food because
it had to be perfect.
And I remember her cleaning shrimp for hours and hours. I mean, mounds and pounds.
Like cocktail shrimp.
Yeah. Now she had servers, but she was the only one that cooked. So, wow, that was quite a tangent, wasn't
it?
Sorry.
And I'm
a little stroll, down memory lane. Okay. So then.
And all this happened in the 80s because I was born in the 80s.
No, my mom did that in the 60s.
Oh.
Yeah.
Were you born in the 60s?
I was born in the 50s.
Do you remember the 60s?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I wasn't unconscious.
I mean, were you like 9?
I was, yeah. I mean, I was born in 1956. So in the 60s, yeah, I was like 9, 10, 7, 8, you know, whatever.
Okay, so you
can remember stuff back then. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the 80s.
That was
when I started. When I started cooking. And she was born.
I was born. I was a child and you peaked.
Yes. The thing that got me off down this rabbit hole was sun-dried tomatoes.
Okay. Yes. It did. It was a thing. Yeah.
And the thing about it was the reason, and here's what's so interesting about sun-dried tomatoes. So they were Italian to start
in
with.
In a jar.
Well, but I mean, if you were in Italy, they weren't. Would draw your own. But yes, they were in a jar. But then, of course, America, we get a hold of it and we find all different kinds of ways to accelerate the process and make them taste like shit. But good sun-dried tomatoes are delicious and plumpy and, you know, they have this intense tomato flavor. And the fancy restaurants would put them on pasta and put them mm-hmm. in salads and put them everywhere.
But were they like a garnish?
They could be.
Yeah.
They could be, yes. But what they said in kind of in this retrospective I was reading about them is you can sun-dried tomatoes and that whole trend is kind of responsible for us having like olive bars in a grocery store.
Yeah.
And what else did they say? Jars of capers on the grocery shelves.
Capers.
Yeah, things like that. And things like, and this may be a little far afield for some people, but Botarga in a restaurant. So that's the fish, you know, it's the compressed fish that you shave onto pasta.
Oh, I didn't
it's like,
know about
it's
this.
Like a, yeah, it's salted cod that is like really compressed, I think.
So is that an 80s thing?
No, but because of the sun-dried tomatoes, uh-huh. we have exotic things like that available to us. That was, I started out, and then I got a list, of course, because I love lists.
Mm.
So the next thing on this list is truffle oil.
80s? Is that an 80s thing?
Mm-hmm.
Fuck, I love truffle oil.
Yeah.
You know that, like on everything.
Yeah. Truffle oil is kind of...
It like peaked in the 80s.
Yeah, but it's kind of the bane of the chef's existence because it's not made with truffles.
It's like fake mac and cheese.
Yeah. It's a chemical.
Yeah.
That reminds you of truffle.
Yes.
Fragrance and taste because truffles are so expensive.
But I'm not going to... I mean, if there are truffle fries with Parmesan cheese... Parmesan.
Mm-hmm.
On a menu or even just fries with truffle oil on a menu, I'm ordering them.
Yeah, I know. I'm not saying it doesn't taste good on things, but it's not real.
Do you think it came out in the 80s? Do you think that's when they scientifically did it?
Yeah. That's what all this stuff just kind of came to fruition.
Okay.
And the next thing is goat cheese.
Oh.
Now, obviously goat cheese was probably around for hundreds of years,
in the hills.
But we discovered it in the 80s and put it on everything. And one of my most favorite things that I've had it on with sun-dried tomatoes is pizza.
Oh, I thought you were going to say an endive because that feels 80s to me.
Well, I think that is 80s.
Yeah, that's
also
80s.
Stuffed.
Endive.
Stiffed. Stuffed. Endive.
Endive. Goat cheese. Okay.
Yeah, I know. Crazy.
Interesting.
Yeah. But all these things, yeah, were like...
But that does make sense because it was on like every salad and it was on like...
Well, in the 80s were really when people started to get into gourmet
food.
Cooking.
Yeah,
and
that's
cooking
true.
At home. A lot of, you know, fancy cooking at home. And then there's wild mushrooms. Yeah. So like ones you forage for, like morels and chanterelles and things like that.
Yeah, that makes sense because they, like you said, they were really into, I feel like, you know, retro, when we talked about retro cooking in the last one, it was all kind of like sciencey stuff, right? Like
add
water or like microwave stuff because the microwaves were new and then the 80s kind of went back to like, what can we find out in the world? Like, what can we forage? They kind of were foraging at that point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that extends to like dried mushrooms mm-hmm. as well, you know, because we have all those like...
Gito. It's gito.
Gito.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry. I just Googled it.
Did your mother
wasn't responding.
Oh, okay. Well, now you know.
Yeah. Now I remember.
So we're talking about mushrooms. So, and then there's all these exotic types of mushrooms. I mean, you can get them fresh now, like maitakes and stuff like that. But that all goes back to the 80s when we had things like morels and chanterelles, and those were the most exotic at that point.
And did you feel like a lot of that stuff was like dried?
I think a lot of it was.
You'd have to rehydrate.
Especially in this part of the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, you couldn't find fresh morels unless you were out foraging in the mm-hmm. woods.
Which
you can now. And I think actually they probably did back then. They mm-hmm. just were like, oh yeah, these are mushrooms and we mm-hmm. eat them and, you know, whatever. it's all those different textures and things like that, that, you know, white button mushrooms just don't get it.
And then don't
buy the canned and the jarred variety.
I don't know what that is. Do you think those are even real mushrooms?
Yes, I think
they are.
They're
petrified.
They're cooked. Yeah. And then they put them in a jar. It's terrible. Caviar.
Yes. Caviar was like lifestyles of the rich and famous.
Yes.
Like, what are they eating?
Champagne and caviar dreams.
Yes.
Yes.
I was like, this is all like pretty shishi in the 80s.
Yes.
This was like, if you had money, you were eating this kind of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now you can kind of buy caviar at the grocery.
You can buy caviar at the grocery.
It may not be great.
And or it's expensive and it is good, but.
Pearl spoons, mother of pearl spoons that you had to use
to get the caviar out.
Yes.
But caviar here, so we all, we ate caviar all the time at Christmas. Hello, kitty cat. But caviar here, I never saw it on the little, they weren't pancakes, but what are they called?
Bellini.
Bellinis. Yeah, that was an American thing.
Well,
or
it's,
is that an Italian thing?
No, it's Russian. Bellini or Russian.
Bellini?
Bellini.
Bellini.
B-L-I-N-I.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the Russian.
With what? Like sour cream. Sour cream and caviar. Yeah.
That's a
new thing for me. Not new. I've eaten it. But.
Duck confit.
Yeah.
Now, I had never heard of duck confit in the 80s. I didn't know what duck confit was.
It was probably just at the very ritzy restaurants.
Yeah. Yeah. So
what is duck confit?
Duck confit is really, it's typically legs. They are very slowly roasted in duck fat. In fact, they're really probably more like...
Duck legs roasted in duck fat?
It's really probably more poaching.
But isn't the confit the fat part?
The confit is the concentration of what happens to the leg meat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the intensified flavor from the duck fat and the slow cooking that gets into the duck meat, and then it's a confit. And if you want it to have some texture, then you like sear it. Once you pull the meat off of the leg and you sear it,
because like you can get duck confit fries.
Yes.
So they're just cooked in that fat.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Or do you mean duck fat fries?
Duck fat fries. Duck fat fries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you don't have to have confit to have duck fat.
Mm-hmm.
It can, ducks have a lot of fat.
And they just have fat.
They have a lot of fat and it's delicious. Fresh herbs.
Again, like we said.
Isn't that crazy?
Well, because everything was like, not depression, but like you wanted to be able to save everything for a long period of time. So everything was dried.
Everything was dried.
Canned or.
Well, and if there was parsley, it was that curly parsley. And all it was used for was garnish.
Yeah.
You didn't eat it.
It was on the shrimp cocktail.
On the shrimp cocktail. Yes.
It was.
And speaking of shrimp and seafood, lobster and crab became very popular in the 80s.
Like a surf and turf. That feels 80s. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or like a lobster. What is that? Thermidor.
Yeah. That was even before the 80s though. And that was very shishi.
So tell people what that is.
It's basically lobster in a cream sauce.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
But really good lobster in a cream sauce.
In a good cream sauce.
It tastes yummy.
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 Yeah. But this is like a list of like
they were very
lifestyles
gourmet.
Of the rich and famous.
Yeah. And then there's saffron.
Okay. I could see that.
Yeah, because it's still expensive today.
And I know in other countries it wasn't a new thing in the 80s.
No, I'm sure not.
Not in
the Middle East.
Yeah. They've been using it for a long time, but it's still, like you said, it's still expensive now.
Yes.
So it's probably really hard to get then.
Oh, I'm sure it was. Well, that's why people started using turmeric.
Mm-hmm.
Because turmeric gives you the same color. But back then they said, oh, turmeric doesn't have any flavor.
Yes, it does.
Well, it does. It's very floral.
Yeah, it does.
Almost like saffron.
And it stains shit.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, like, you can't get it out.
No.
And it's good for you.
It is good. Anti-inflammatory.
It is.
And you can put it on your face.
And then you have a yellow face.
And you have beautiful glowing skin.
That's yellow. foie gras. And you know, it's fallen way out of favor now.
Well, because you of the way it's made.
Yeah, it is kind of nasty the way they make it.
It is kind of sad the way they... Oh God, it's so good.
It is so delicious.
It is like butter.
It is so
Tell everybody what it is, and then we'll tell them how it's made.
Foie gras is a goose, typically a goose, but it can be a duck liver. But the duck... or the goose, they're overfed. They're force-fed. So the liver becomes very enlarged and delicious.
Is that what kills them?
No, I don't think so. No, they don't die of cirrhosis or anything like that.
They don't die because their fucking liver explodes because it's so full.
Yeah.
But it's like, if it's done right, and this is definitely one that needs to be done correctly.
Oh, yeah.
Much like, I feel like, God... just lost the word. Come back to that.
Okay.
It is like...
Indexing.
Smooth, creamy butter.
Yeah.
If it's done right.
Yeah. A seared foie gras.
Pork belly. If pork belly's not done right...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's in a different category than foie gras.
It is.
But it's just, one of those things.
It's one of those things that needs to be correct. And because if it's not, it's not.
Yeah, it's not good at all. Microgreens.
I think this should have been on the one we talked about last week or next week or whatever, the comebacks, because
microgreens are making a
they're
comeback.
Making a huge comeback. Yeah. I just saw them at the farmer's market the other day and they're selling for
expensive.
Dude, you can make microgreens.
Yes.
They grow very quickly and easily.
Yeah. It's just like it's just shoots off of a
seed.
Know. Yeah, just a seed.
You put the seeds by your sink on a paper towel and they grow.
Then you have microgreens.
It's very simple. But I saw that and I was like, oh, that's expensive.
Yeah.
Making a comeback for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. But they made their appearance.
But we always ate watercress and egg salad sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
And watercress is a microgreen.
Yeah. And I always thought watercress was so fancy.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, it's
no,
not.
Just British.
But it's really good. It's really good.
It is
good. Balsamic vinegar.
Yeah.
Made its appearance in the 80s.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe it was on everything. I still everything. But reduction now.
Yeah.
But vinegar
But there are so many variations on balsamic vinegar. And just like what happened to sun-dried tomatoes, there's a lot of terrible balsamic vinegar out there.
Very bad.
Very bad.
Very bad.
But if you can get good balsamic vinegar, it's just like a little piece of heaven.
It's delicious.
It's not, I mean, it's just rich and it still is acidic, but it doesn't bite you.
Yeah.
You know, like regular vinegars do. It's just, God, it's just so delicious. All right. Well, we kind of touched on this already with lobster and crab, but fresh seafood.
Like a seafood tower?
Yeah. Like Jeremiah Tower.
Like Seafood Tower.
They have Seafood Tower. Yeah. Big. I mean, and every kind of seafood in the world on it. In fact, let's see, how long ago was it? It was before COVID. So it was probably 5 years ago. And I was in LA for that workshop for Thermador and Bosch. And we went to a restaurant. Actually, I can't think of his name now, but it doesn't matter. But we had a seafood tower.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. It's very impressive.
What the fuck is a seafood tower?
It's just, I mean, it's like tiers.
Of cold seafood?
Of cold seafood.
Mm.
Yeah.
And
delicious.
A bunch of cocktail sauce?
But, well, lots of different sauces. Not just cocktail, many different sauces. Okay. Tofu made its appearance in the 80s in the States.
Okay.
Probably before that with the hippies.
I was going to say, I feel like it's more hippy-dippy.
Yeah.
But I could see because of the food trend that was happening in the 80s, mm-hmm. I could see how they could take it and make it into something a little better or think.
Edible. Something edible.
Yeah.
But now we have every kind of tofu you can imagine. The silken tofu, the firm tofu, the extra firm tofu, you know.
I don't know what it all means.
All those things.
I do know that I will say that Whole Foods, and I don't know if they do it anymore, but they used to do it. It was like a triangle. And it was like spicy something tofu, and it was so good. Like just if you wanted like to run in and grab it, like if you were shopping and you wanted a snack and you didn't want something shitty.
So was it cold, room temp?
It was room temp. Yeah. Uh-huh. It was not chilled, but just room temp.
Huh.
And it was so good. I would get it. I would get it every time I go. And then I stopped making
it. We're not tofu eaters.
That's
not
the only time I think I've ever eaten tofu.
Yeah, no. Just, I can't get next to that texture. I'm a texture. I just am. Let's try that again. Fruit purees.
Like in desserts?
Well, you know, we used all those purees in those cocktails we would make. Oh, all those fancy ass fruit purees.
That wasn't the 80s.
I know, but that's when we started using them.
Yeah.
For like the Cosmopolitan. We used
the blood orange.
Blood orange.
So good.
And then the
prickly pear
margarita.
Oh, so good too. Yeah. Those purees were so good. But I remember,
it's hard to say.
It's like, it almost reminds me of like compote. And I feel like compote is an 80s thing. Like fruit compote.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Definitely.
And that's where my brain goes. And that's what I think of.
This is all mashed up.
Mm-hmm.
Mashy, mashy.
Mashy, mashy.
Mashy,
what
mashy.
Else you got?
Exotic spices.
Oh, what does that mean?
That means things like, cardamom and anise and coriander. All the things that we use all the time now.
Well, and again, like the saffron, probably things that other countries have been using. Definitely things other countries have been using for a long time. But probably in the 80s, they were able to get it.
Yeah, exactly.
So there was something that happened, and then they were able to get it.
And you could get it, I'm sure, on the coasts, because I had a lot of these. My brother lived in Seattle for a long time, and so when I would go to Seattle, there were all kinds of ingredients that they had that I had never seen in the wilds of Oklahoma.
Yeah.
So then
there's still like that.
Well, I mean, a lot of things. Not
you can
not
get
as
almost
bad.
Everything, but like you still
because there's Amazon.
Because there's Amazon.com. but there's a lot of when you go to like. That is one thing I do like to do if I go to a different country or if I go to a different part of the world, like, or the US, is go to like a decent grocery store because the things that they have are different. And then the things they have like more of.
Oh, yeah.
It's different. You know?
So if you ever have an actually any part of the country here, go to a grocery or go to a butcher or go, you know, a bakery or whatever and check out
a
candlestick maker. That too. And see all the different things that they have that we don't have.
Yeah.
And broaden your horizons.
I mean, shit, I went to, this is so dumb. My mom lives in Florida now and we went and they have different seafood seasonings at Walmart that they don't have here because
we don't have seafood.
So I was like souvenir shopping at Walmart oh, I know someone that would like this. And like, oh, it was made there. And, you know,
well, it's like, you know, all of the barbecue flavors, the barbecue sauces, the barbecue rubs, all that kind of stuff that we have here. That why would they have that in Florida?
Right.
Because they don't have all the beef that we have.
Yeah.
Here,
yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
So when you go somewhere, you
can
learn
souvenir shopping.
Do your souvenir shopping
at the grocery store.
At the grocery, it's a lot cheaper.
It's a lot cheaper.
So we're going to say stay fresh.
Radical Bags.